Hey everyone, welcome to another exciting episode of the Scratch the Track podcast presented by the Dude and Grim Show and co-produced by Mr. I-V-E-S-T. I'm the Dude.
And I am Grim, and today, let us behold and scratch mutations by none other than Beck Hansen.
Mr. Beck
His Hansen. Sixth, not that one, that really, I mean, I knew, you know, there was obviously things that had preceded it, but that kind of threw me for a little bit of a loop that was number six already at mutations. Because I think for a lot of people, it was probably number two. I mean, at the time that it came out, I guess I didn't have the wherewithal to like really try to find all his older stuff in his catalog. I mean, I don't even remember really listening to One Foot in the Grave until college.
A lot of people, I mean, what do you call it? Loser was like the big track or song that put him on the map.
You knew about that one.
But even that was sort of like, it was, what other songs are on there that were like radio hits?
I don't know that there's any other radio hits. There's some other good songs on there, and there's some other stuff that you're like, well, I mean, he's kind of, you know, figuring out his style.
He's exploring the space. But. Yeah.
I could never really get my head around Stereopathetic Soul Manure. That one is I was just like, I don't know why anyone put this out. I don't get it.
So you don't have it on vinyl.
Correct. That is correct. And okay, it's not on my want list.
Birthday's
either.
Coming up.
But this one I do.
Happy birthday, Graham.
And I've always liked this one. And I think something we were talking about even before the episode, a real, like, I'd say the first, I guess, in terms of his major albums, the first big pivot, big change, so aptly titled Mutations.
True. Yeah. Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, I tried to put myself back sort of in this time period. I mean, this came out in 98. Odelay was, I believe, a couple years before that. And, you know, I'm curious as to, because I didn't listen to this right when it came out. Like, it wasn't really on my radar. And so I'm curious as to, like, what fans who are like, oh, I got Odelay, it's amazing, it's awesome, I can't wait for the next one. And then this comes out, it's so different, so much more somber, that I'm curious, like, what their reaction sort of would
I
be,
did
right?
Listen
like,
to this.
I could see a lot of people being turned off by it.
I did maybe not like, you know, the day it came out, but I remember a friend of mine had it early and she would play it quite regularly. And that's kind of how for some reason, although I will say I didn't run out and buy it on CD, but I always did like it. And through the years, it's just always kind of came back as one that I really like, because I like the fact that it was a departure from all the sample based songs. And, it has a different feel, but it's not too slow. It's not too somber. There's still like a lot of humor in the lyrics.
There's still a lot of
variety in the styles, honestly.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing. If you did sort of think, I mean, I do think it's slow and somber, but then he comes out with Sea Change. Hey. And that is like, I mean, you know, if you thought this was slow and somber, wait
makes
for that
Mutations
one, right?
Look like Slayer. I mean,
pretty much. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It does. It does for sure, man. You know, it's interesting for some reason, and I don't know why I thought this. I think for the longest time, I actually thought that this came out in a sense before Odelay. And part of the reason I thought that was because if you think about a band and a band's progression, typically, you know, their orchestration and things get a little more crazy and wild and everything as kind of their career goes a little bit, at least for some reason, I mentally have that sort of impression. And so I was like, oh yeah, you know, you could see like Mutations and then it makes sense he would come out with Odelay next. But then when I actually started doing research, I was like, oh, that's weird. Okay. I can understand that and see that now. It makes things the sort of the change and switching up styles more impactful.
Yeah, I agree.
As far as what he's done, because then after this one, he comes out with Midnight Vultures, which just your head explodes at that point. I mean, dude.
You know, and one thing I think it's interesting, you're right about when everything's sort of toned down a little bit around it, the change in styles is more impactful, because I think in Odelay, there's a song, Sissy Neck, that kind of has almost like a country-ish sort of feel to it. They sampled something with steel guitars, but it still sounds like all the other stuff because of the way it's built around these samples and has beats and stuff. Right. Where the ones on this album that are more country influenced really sound a lot more like country.
Yeah, you know? Definitely. Yeah, 100%. It definitely has that country folky feel. And that's why there's a part of me that, you know, as fans, I think oftentimes we like an album and then we're like, oh, I can't wait for the next one to come out. And there's a part of you that sort of wants it to be almost, you know, part two, I guess. And this is not Odelay part two by any means, you know?
So another thing that always caught me too, dude, was just that if you think about the cover for Odelay, it's kind of got that weird dog jumping over, that obstacle. And it's just the cover's kind of crazy, like the music. And you look at the cover for Mutations, and it's also so very plain. Subdued. He has a little plastic wrap around him. But I like, at least on the vinyl, it kind of has a bit of like iridescence to it, which is cool. It's a little shiny. And then on the inside, they have these sculptures that were by an artist. And one of them, I think, is the precursor to what would be known now in the internet age as a cursed image. Do you know what a cursed image is, dude?
Vaguely, why don't you refresh my memory?
My oldest son showed them to me, and they're kind of funny, but they mess with your head because it's a picture of something that does not belong together, and it kind of like grosses you out. So a good example would be like if somebody were to have taken SpaghettiOs and put them in an ice tray and made SpaghettiO ice cubes, like shit like that. So, you know, one, it has this sculpture, which looks like a thumb or maybe a toe. You want a toe? I can get you a toe.
You can get your toe by 4 o'clock.
But then when you flip
forget about the
when you toe. Flip it, it's like the toe is cut open and it houses all these pencils and pens in there, and it really looks strange. So it kind of messes with you.
Yeah, that's really interesting. It's very sort of disorienting for sure.
Yeah. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Now I know one thing that you were mentioning earlier was a little bit of a snafu that happened in terms of how this was released and who did what and owned what. And
yeah, I mean, dude, I don't know what sort of, well, I know the thought process behind Beck wanting to do this. I'm not sure the thought process behind Geffen Records, and except just to maybe make Beck happy. But essentially Beck asked permission from Geffen Records to release this album under Bongload Records, which, you know, is an indie label. And at first, Geffen was like, oh, yeah, you know, that's fine, which I'm not sure why they would do that from a business standpoint. Why they would go along with that. But then when the executives heard the album, they actually reneged on, on that, and they released the record.
Yeah.
And then Beck filed a lawsuit against them. Now, you said on the record itself, it has both labels, correct?
It does. And even when you look at the article, it claims both Geffen and Bongload as the record labels. So hopefully, maybe part of that lawsuit entailed Bongload Records getting a cut or something. But hopefully that was worked out, I guess. And all the stuff, I never really found anything about what happened with that lawsuit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I didn't either. So if anybody out there knows, please let us know. I mean, I imagine with Bongload, they really, you know, Beck probably just wanted to help promote them and put them on the map, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is a way to do that. Even for them, putting their logo or something on here would help doing that. I don't know from a financial standpoint if there was a cut or how involved they were in everything else.
You know, with a name like Bong Load Records, their logo is actually surprisingly plain. Oh, really? Yeah, it's just like a little rectangle. It's not.
It's a great name. It's like Dirk Diggler of.
It is making a statement for sure. All the great ones leave their mark, and Bong Load is no stranger to that.
No.
So three Chester singles.
Rockwell or Brock Landers. Yeah.
Well, two singles.
Well, that's what's interesting from what I read. Yeah, there were singles, but not in the U.S. It was like Australia and in another country. I forget what one was. And then another song was released in Japan. Like they didn't.
No,
there wasn't like a.
I thought they US, had singles, but just no videos.
Well, there was no videos for sure, yeah. But at least the quote unquote singles that at least in the article I saw was I thought they said that it was only released
Australia and New Zealand only.
Yeah, weird. For Tropicalia and Cold Brains. Yep. And then Nobody's Fault But My Own. It's a big, I mean, obviously a big Japanese hit.
What's funny though is. Based on what he chose to play on his SNL performance, I remember that in hearing Nobody's Fault But My Own. And so that almost became in a way like the single, because although it wasn't a music video in its traditional sense, it was a video recording of him playing something off that new album.
Right. I would like to know more. And if people out there know more, like what was the thought process? I mean, you're coming off Odelay, which was just a huge hit, a bunch of multiple music videos, all done by pretty prestigious music video directors. And this is, again, a more of a tame, somber album compared to Odelay. And maybe he just didn't want to come out in that way. But I mean, even from a, Geffen Records standpoint, like, I can't believe they'd be like, yeah, okay, we're not going to release a single in the U.S. or, I don't know. It's just like, what was the thought process? Because it seems like, once you're a part of the machine, man.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
They want to keep pumping stuff out.
I understand it's probably hard to get out of that. Yeah, I don't know. That is a really good question. But, maybe it's, I would imagine from the artist perspective, there's some bit of it that's like, well, I want to see if they're actually interested in what I'm doing, or if it's just that this was a one-off thing that somehow really resonated with everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can understand that. I guess there's a part of me that, especially if you're under a record contract, you're probably not going to have much of a choice. But I mean, who knows? Maybe at that point, his quote unquote record deal was done and he was just in partnership with Geffen to just release the album, I don't know how his, what the relationship or the contract was like with Geffen and what they were, had the power to do. I do find it surprising, like, because typically, musicians just want to do that. It's like, hey, I just made a huge album. Now I'm going to release the next one and have it be like real underground. Yeah. But, you saw even in a weird way, like what Led Zeppelin, when they released 4, like it didn't have the name of the band on it. It didn't have like it was just it,
That's true. And I don't know if they released singles from that or not. I would assume they did because, I mean, shit, like if you looked at classic rock radio, they'd still probably be in the top 10 of what gets played on there. Every day, without fail. Thanks for ruining the music.
Yeah, I mean, you're gonna hear Black Dog, Rock and Roll, Stairway.
Yeah.
What do you call?
Probably
it?
When the levee breaks. That might be one of those ones where they're going like the underground show, and you're like, wow,
yeah,
real underground choice, dickhead. So speaking of some of the tracks that are a little more underground, the bonus tracks. There's 5 of them for this one. I was always familiar with Diamond Bullocks because that was the hidden track on the CD. I knew that one. And that's one thing I was going to comment on the vinyl release that I think was really cool what they did, because it doesn't, the album proper fits on the vinyl, but not, not with the hidden track. So what they did is they gave you a 7-inch here, 45 single. And so Diamond Bullocks is on one side, and then that song Runner's Dial Zero is on the other side.
Interesting.
Yeah. Wow. And if we've, I guess I hadn't really heard Runner's Dial Zero prior to picking this up. It's very, there's like a big delay in it, and he's playing the piano, and it kind of is somber. I listened to all these tracks in preparation for today's exciting episode. And I don't know, I would have chose Halo of Gold. I think that's a cool song that fits with the style. Yeah. And I will say, you may, dude, know Electric Music and Summer People, because that ended up being released on the second disc of Odelay Expanded Edition.
Ooh.
Yeah, because when I listened to that, I recognized it. So
I gotcha. Okay. Well, it's pretty cool. I mean, that's a good amount of tracks for, that they recorded. Now, I don't know if all those were recorded, during these sessions, but essentially, he worked with Nigel Godrich on this, which I know both you and I were sort of surprised. We knew that they had worked with Nigel on Sea Change. But Beck had been a fan of what he did with Radiohead.
Go figure.
And OK Computer had just come out the year before. Obviously, most people have heard of that one. It was kind of, had a few hits on it.
Big deal.
But they recorded this, he said, in 2 weeks.
Yeah, they just knocked out a song a day.
Yeah. And most of the songs were recorded live, which, you can tell. I mean, there's definitely, plenty of overdubs and stuff like that. But, having an acoustic bass and everything just based, really, really lent itself to that. When you compare it to Odelay, which is, so sample heavy and everything. But I just, it's cool, man, when you hear about sort of albums that are done like that. There's some people who, some bands who record and they'll be in it for a, where we go in the studio, or they go in the studio, right, with like no material, and it's just kind of like, hey, we're going to figure it out. And they just sound like actual, almost like horrible experiences, these long drawn out
sort
of processes of trying to like figure it out. But man,
this seems like the way an album should be recorded.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, hey, we're going to go in here. It's almost like a job. Like, it's an actual job at that point. It's like, well, we're going to record a song today.
Oh, I mean, that's how they do it in Nashville, man. Like, those guys, they show them the charts, and basically they play it better than the artist could have ever imagined. And these guys, although not like these Nashville cats, I mean, these guys that he worked with on this were his touring band, and still have played on. I know at least Robert Joseph Manning and Justin Meldell Johnson have played on, I think, if not all his releases since then, a lot of them.
And continued to tour with them. And,
So clearly those guys are all comfortable playing together. So I would imagine it wasn't, he comes in and he says, well, this is my song. I kind of have an idea that it sounds like this, and away you go.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he does play, it says all songs like written by Beck Hansen. So it's like, man, I mean, he's just, it's weird, man. I don't know. There's a part of me that feels like maybe Beck doesn't get enough credit. Like, if you think about all the styles and
how he's never
sort of remade the same album. I mean, I guess you could say, what is it? Sea Change and was it Colors?
Morning Phase.
Phase. Those were kind of similar. I mean, because they're both like just very.
I think may have been. That was really nice of you to use kind of. But yeah,
kind of. But yeah, so I just think they. For the most part, he's every album he's done a left turn.
Yeah.
And I think it's pretty cool, man.
Yeah, I agree.
It's pretty cool.
And I like that, so we just did tease that those two albums are the same. However, in between those, there was a lot of different things. And I mean, he even kind of returned to a sound that was more like Odelay on Guero, and a little bit even, on Guero. The Information kind of. So,
Dude, and then. Yeah, Modern Guilt, man.
Oh,
dude,
yeah.
That's actually one of my favorite albums. Might be the one I listen to the most.
Really?
I mean, Danger Mouse produced
it.
Yeah,
I
love
that's
it, cool. Dude. It's got such a good sound. And dude, it's 10 songs. It's 34 minutes. It's like such an easy, quick listen.
Yeah.
It's some just good, really straightforward music. And it's, yeah, there's something about it I've just always really liked about that one.
All right.
You know, so, but, you know, I don't know, Graham, are we about ready to get into that spot.
I think we're kind of there.
Yeah. So for those of you who might be new to this show in the year 2023, well, hopefully we can get this episode out this year. this is the point where we talk about each track individually, and we're going to pick our favorite track, and then we're going to also pick the track that we would scratch.
If we had to.
So because this album was released in the days where CDs were the primary medium to listen to music on. And so if you had this on CD, there's a good chance you probably were, had one of those CD books, right? And you probably played it in your car. So the chances of it like falling between the seats while you're driving, you know, and you got a cheeseburger in one hand and you're trying to put a CD in the other, there's a good chance it slipped between the seats and may have gotten scratched. And so what track would you scratch? That's the game.
And so, yeah. And go ahead and tell us right after you do the obvious.
Like, subscribe, and comment below.
Yeah. So
like, subscribe, comment below. We're going to start off, Grim. We're going to start off with a little cold brain action.
I love the way this comes in. Now, one thing I can say about it that I feel like people who were really into Odelay could still get drawn in is because it has the acoustic guitar and it's a little slower, but you still got all those synth sounds that are really, really spacey and really, well, I mean, they're actually, I don't know that they have anything to do with space, but because that's what we associate them with, you know?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
But I like that. I think it's like an interesting way to kind of keep some sort of let you know that this is still the same guy, but at the same point, you're going into a different space.
Yep. 100%. I think initially upon hearing it, you're totally right that, you can hear there's so many layers and levels to the song. Right. But it's a lot more subtle and not in your face the way Odelay, you know, when you put Odelay on, a Devil's Haircut comes on, it kind of punches you in the face. Yeah. This doesn't do that. This doesn't do that. And dude, actually this track was recorded. I don't know if it was recorded, but it was written during the One Foot in the Grave. And it was actually supposed to be on that.
Oh, wow.
But he held on to it and released it on this album. Now, I don't know if he recorded it back then and this is part of it or they re-recorded it. I don't know, you know, what that process was like, but from what I read, this is, at least it was a part of those sessions.
That's cool. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear that version. It would be hard for me to top the version on Mutations, but I would like to hear it.
Yeah. Yeah. And now is he just playing a regular acoustic guitar with like a steel string or is it a steel? Steel guitar?
No, I think it's just a regular steel string acoustic.
Okay.
But I mean, there's a lot of times where there's like pedal steel in the background on certain songs. And I can't, I'm not thinking right now whether it is on this or not. But I mean, you know, that sound is sort of pervasive throughout the album too. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, then we move on to track number two, Nobody's Fault But My Own.
Going into Indian music.
Yeah. It's very, this is a very dark song.
Yeah.
Like very, very dark, is a really good sound. And, it's, to me, it's probably the saddest, at least this point in his career, probably the saddest and most introspective song that he had come out with.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I can't think of a song, on any of his previous albums that would kind of fit this criteria.
Yeah, and it's interesting that he chose this to be one of the ones that he dropped on SNL.
I think so too. I mean, it's not like the song. I don't know. I think there's a lot of people, if you hadn't listened, hypothetically, let's say, you hadn't heard back or listened to Odelay, I don't know, man, if you were like watching SNL and you hear this song, are you like, oh, I want to go out and buy that album? You know, I don't know.
Well,
I don't
know. Hopefully you at least watch Tropicalia too, so that you would understand that the whole album, he's not, you know, it's not as not hanging out with Ravi Shankar phase.
Yeah. No, girls in white cotton panties. Yeah. Yeah. But dude, even some of the lyrics here, you know, who would ever notice you? You fade into a shaded room. It's such a selfish way to lose. The way you lose these wasted blues.
Yeah.
I mean, dude, that's pretty sad and depressing, to be honest.
Yeah,
I mean,
it is. It is. And the song is very slow and
Yep. Yeah.
But then he picks it back up with Lazy Flies. And in Lazy Flies, I think to me it's a nice pickup because it's got a little more percussiveness to it. Right. Than anything on the album so far. So that helps pick it up. And I think that the lyrically, it's kind of like taking you back to like, let's say the Beck that you thought you knew before, because the lyrics are just kind of almost humorous silly. At times and silly and all over the place.
Yeah. He just does some fantastic things with his lyrics. I've always said, and I'm sure, you know, this could rub people the wrong way, but from a lyrical perspective, or the right way, I don't know. But from a lyrical perspective, he reminds me so much of like a modern day Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
The way he constructs those words that shouldn't fit together. He fits them together.
Yeah.
And in a weird way, they make sense. And I just think it's pretty amazing.
And even if they don't, they sound good together. So it mm-hmm. you accept it as is and move on. Yeah,
exactly. Yep. Well, then we move on to track number four, and this is one of my favorite songs on the album.
Agreed. Kind of getting into the country a little bit.
Yeah.
You
know,
you got the pedal steel on and
yep.
A little piano.
Yeah, some harmonica, right?
Yeah. Like, the whole, it's just, I don't know. And lyrically too, again, simple line, but I hate to do this, but you're a pain in the neck. I thought you knew this. You're handing me a canceled check.
Canceled check.
It just works.
Yep. Yeah. Well, dude, one thing I noticed too, though, and I'm sure you've heard this, there's that donkey song in the sound in the middle.
Oh,
which of course you hear in Jackass on Odelay.
Yeah.
And I just thought, I was like, what an interesting choice to throw that in to this track. I don't know if it's the same exact like kind of like donkey sound.
Yeah.
But I just thought it was interesting. I don't know if it's a little sort of like an ode to Odelay, but I really noticed that this time. I was like, wow, it's cool and strange at the same time.
Yeah, I know it.
But one of my favorite lines from this song has always been, you know, and I love the way he sings it. And I get caught up in the moonlight, reaching out for a rotten egg. Yeah. I don't want to beg. It's crystal clear. Your time is nearly gone. Again, just silly.
Doesn't really sort of make sense, but it works somehow.
At all. But it does. And then, Graham, we have sort of the, at the end of the song, another crazy
Beck ending.
Classic. Yeah, that we've referred to as, it's got a Beck ending. And
yeah.
Where it's just not a nonsense mixture of sounds just kind of all going wild and together.
Yep.
Which is always just kind of fun to listen to.
Yeah, it is kind of weird. And I think too, they have like some synthesizer noises in there, which is funny because you don't really hear that in the song at all, but they
bring it out.
Yeah. Now I like the fact that when you have that kind of crazy ending, everything sort of gets real buttoned up for We Live Again.
It does.
I really like this song. Always have. It's kind of sad. It has that Picardy third in the end, which is just kind of shifting from major to minor, where he says, "Oh, I grow weary of the end."
Yeah.
But I just, it's real thick. The lyrics are kind of darker and somber.
They are.
I think there's harpsichord on there. I mean, it is just, I don't know. It's,
That's what gives it that heavenly sort of sound.
Yeah.
Like the way I described it, like I put in my notes, I was like, I can just see myself like floating on a cloud in the sky in some sort of like hypnotized comatose state. Like, you know, just
that
like,
is very specific, but yes,
it is. It's like, it's almost like, you know, you just like, smoke some opium or something like that, and you're just like, man, I'm very dude.
The one line in here that always gets me is, when will children learn to let their wildernesses burn? That is a really interesting line.
That is very interesting. I like that line a lot.
Yeah.
I really do. I like it a lot. Well, then, and then we, you know, just like we would go from Canceled Check into We Live Again, there's the huge transition. Now, Grim, on your album, where's the switch? It's not here. Okay. So after Tropicalia.
I just pulled it up to look. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's interesting. I mean, I think Tropicalia, I mean, obviously this was not intentionally pressed for vinyl when it came out. I think starting side two with Tropicalia I would like that.
I would like it very much too, but that's not what that's they did. That's
not how they did it. It's not how they did it, man. But this dude, this to me is just such like a fun song.
Yeah, it's the upbeat, fun song that really reminds you of the older era of what you'd heard before. I mean, it really, it's like a more emphasized, because it reminds me of Dead Weight sometimes too.
Yes, 100%. But it's, dude, 100%.
But it's very much a nod to the Tropicália music and the stuff that was coming out of Brazil, which people even speculated that. The name of the album was a nod to this late 60s band called Os Mutantes. I don't know. I mean, that's still speculation.
Beck, can you confirm? Can you confirm or deny that, please? I'm sure.
Oh, he's calling in.
Mr. Hansen. Yeah. All right.
So now we flip it.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. So now, well, I was going to say, this actually does, this song also has a little bit of a chaotic ending too. Not as long as Canceled Check, but it does have that sort of little thing. And I've just always, again, always really loved this song. And it's a little different, than the tone of the rest of the album.
But it still has like these lyrics that are like, partied out, you know, where he's like, and there's no more confetti like to Phil. Throw. And yeah, dude,
partied out again.
Yeah.
Partied out again, man. But yeah. All right. So we'll flip it to Dead Melodies, which this to me has such like this, it has a folky feel, but it's more of a classical folky feel to it. I don't know if it's the way he's playing the guitar.
To me, it's very much related to We Live Again, but it's a little more toned down and, like you said, like a folkier version of that. There's a lot of similarities between the two, and I really like it as well. And for me, I'm not the biggest fan of the real slow, somber Beck, but the stuff on this album, it really resonated with me. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, one thing when I was, and I don't know why it was specifically when I got to this track, but one thing I kind of notice about, and you can, and I know you will certainly correct me if I'm wrong, but, one thing is with his vocals, he doesn't do a lot of like background vocals and background harmonies that at least that I can remember. Like that's like, I don't know. Is that's
yeah,
just really,
sometimes he'll have harmonies, but I know what you mean. Really? Not like the beat. Yeah. But when I say harmonies, he could be singing the same line that he's singing as opposed to like, when you think of the Beatles always come to mind.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, absolutely. There's no bang, bang, shoot, shoots, right? Yeah,
correct.
Yes. None of that. So anyways, I don't know why, for some reason, when I started listening to this song, that's kind of what I just kind of noticed at that point. I was like, oh, okay. He just kind of keeps them pretty straightforward. But then we go to track number 8, Grim. A little bit of Bottle of Blues. Always one of my favorite tracks on the album.
Me too. It's got that weird little bell in the beginning.
Yeah. It's again acoustic guitar with some harmonica parts, some good lyrics. But it's having it be again a little more upbeat It's not, you know, that completely somber. So I do think this album does have a nice balance of kind of like, okay, we're getting somber. Okay, let's need a little bit of a pick me up. And unlike maybe, you know, Sea Change, which it kind of, you know, it's like, oh, okay, well, we're going to have another slow acoustic one. Okay.
Yeah.
But dude, some of the lyrics here, you know, and I've been waiting for a year, a day, some strange weather must be blowing my way. And then at the end, dude, like a tired soldier with nothing to shoot and nowhere to lose this bottle of blues. Right. I mean, it's dude, just some fun words.
Man. I like before he goes into the second verse and you just hear him. He's like, what? Did you notice that on the microphone where he kind of
I haven't noticed that.
Yeah, listen for it. It's funny because he does. It's like someone's talking to him and he just kind of is like, what? And he says something else in there at some point too, but I kind of like those little studio snippets that the people studio keep things. In, you know. It's
it's pretty cool. Dude, track number 9, Oh Maria. Mm. And this for me is one of my favorite songs too.
Yeah.
And one thing I like and like with this album, he does on a few songs, and I don't exactly know how you would call it. I refer to it as sort of like this, like the saloon style.
Oh,
of
piano playing. Absolutely. Right? Yeah. I was going to bring that up. Like, yeah, it really has that sort of a feel to it. It sounds like they just used a regular piano. I mean, a tack piano right? would have really, yeah. but it almost would have been too much.
I think so. And I just love that sort of style of play style of playing. Cause it reminds me of like the old West or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is. And I could just listen to that. I could listen to that all day.
Yeah.
But
the night is useless. And so are we.
Oh, it's so good. But again, his kind of great lyrics. And I've been looking for my shadow, but this place is so bright and so clean.
Yeah.
You know, just I don't know, man. Fun words, dude, that kind of go together and paint a picture.
But again, the darkness, everybody knows that death creeps in slow until you feel safe in his arms. That's a good one. It's a good one.
Mr. Hansen, you've done it again.
Again. And so now you can sing it again.
Sing it again.
But another real,
you know,
country kind of nod there.
100%, man. Very folky, very, very straightforward.
And I think they're using the brushes on the drums. You can hear that.
Okay, I was curious. They're played so soft, and that would make sense. Mm-hmm. That would make sense there.
Brushes.
To me, this song, and probably because of that, this song almost feels like a lullaby to me.
Yeah. Oh, sure. I can see that.
You know,
yeah. But it still has the golden country kind of feel to it. You know.
Totally.
Yeah.
And I don't know, and maybe you know. I don't know if you know this from just, you know, listening to it, but. I don't know if this was played with a stand-up bass, but I kind of always envisioned it that way.
It right? does. Now that you mention that, I hadn't thought about that before, but man, it really does sound like a stand-up bass. Let me see if it says.
Yeah, see what Justin played on that.
JMJ.
Yeah, I imagine he'd be the one playing.
Yeah, it doesn't say, but it really does sound like that for sure.
Yeah. Like if he was gonna play this live, I would hope that's how they'd play it, right?
Yeah.
So, then we get into now. Do you consider this? I guess I consider this one track, Static, you know, / Diamond Bollocks. Do you consider it one track? I mean, because that's how it was initially on the CD, right?
Yeah, of course. But they always did that because that was the whole hidden track.
That gimmick. Was a thing, right? Yeah.
But there's such a break between them. I would almost have to consider them separate, but
okay.
Cause I think it's fair in our purposes, because sometimes when you would scratch a track, it might not be the whole track that gets scratched. It might be a certain part. And I think
you're just like, I don't like that part.
Something that's 11 minutes. I think you can kind of choose at that point, but I like Static. Yeah. It's like real subtle electric guitar, but it's, to me, it's a vibe and a sound you have not heard in the album thus far.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you say that because I actually like Diamond Bollocks part.
Oh, I love Diamond Bollocks. But it's just, it's also, I think it was the hidden track for a reason. Yeah. Because it doesn't fit with anything else at all on the album.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a it's a great track. The harpsichord in there and like the fuzz bass, everything about it. Yeah. He's got some background vocals in this one, dude.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Okay. There you go. It's, you know, it's just kind of interesting that, you know, for the end of the album, I mean, obviously this is the place to put these songs.
Yeah.
So it makes sense. You're going to put them there.
But Static's a good end, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I just find it interesting, though, that, you know, okay, in this album, like this is like such an outlier. And then you look at, you know, Ramshackle on Odelay. That is, I mean, I love that song again.
Dude, me too.
And such an outlier though for the rest of the rest of the album.
Yeah, but so, I will say I like the hidden track on this one a lot better than.
I am 100%.
Like this 100% is a proper song. You know, it's not just like noise robots having sex experiments.
Sex. Yeah, which is great. You know, we're not. Yeah. Not talking smack about robots having sex. I mean, at this point, they pretty much are. I mean, they've become self-aware.
I was going to say, once they become self-aware, dude, that's going to happen.
Dude.
It's like, batteries not included. You remember that movie? The robots kind of did their thing, and they made baby robots, and batteries not included.
Oh, man.
Check that one out.
Well, yeah. Well, we got, What's the company or the company in Terminator 2? I know Miles Dyson.
Skynet.
Skydyne, right?
Skynet.
Skynet.
Yeah, once Skynet becomes self-aware, man, the shit is hitting the fan.
Dude, we have T-1000s just everywhere. All right, so enough of that fun talk. So, Grim, what should be our device to scratch?
Well, before we do that, let's talk about our favorite song.
Yep. Okay. What's your favorite? You go for it. You want me to go first?
Yeah, you go first.
You know, I for me, I think it's between two. I think it's between Cancel Check and Oh Maria.
Okay.
You know, I would probably say between those two. You know, maybe I would go with Cancel Check is slightly ahead, but yeah, I think that's where I'd go.
I think the two that I wrestle with, but still my favorite is probably We Live Again. But Canceled Check is like those ones are real tough. I think last time I listened to this, I actually played that song again, which is a pain in the ass on a record player. But I was like, it's just so good.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Right. It's awesome. All right. Well, then it's time to scratch. Now, I find it interesting because like before we got on this episode, like you're pretty pretty sure that we're going to overtime here, man.
I think the possibility exists.
Man, interesting.
It may not. I could be wrong, but I feel like the possibility exists.
Okay. So do I go first or do you go first?
In the spirit of things, we'll continue with you on the tee, I guess.
Oh, okay. So I got a couple backups.
I do too.
Okay. But I'm going to go with Dead Melodies.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, you know, there's just something. Well, and now that you told me it started side two of the vinyl, I think
you
that
definitely can
it
now.
An easier, yeah, definitely an easier choice there.
Okay.
Because I would have no problem starting a side two with Tropicalia or Bottle of Blues. That's for sure.
I think we're gonna. By the way, we're gonna scratch this with a diamond ring.
Ooh,
because like the diamond bullocks, like you know. Yeah,
I like it. Yeah, okay. I like that. But yeah, man, dude, there's just something about this song just didn't really grab me. I feel like again the whole album itself has sort of like this classic-y folky or this folky kind of country feel, and I felt like with this one nothing really stood out to me as it did with other songs. So
it's fair. Okay. Bless you.
Sneeze. Thanks, man. So what are you gonna go with, my friend?
Well, I'm ready for it if you want to drop this when I say this, because I could see it being dropped. But I'm getting out my diamond ring and I'm scratching Tropicalia.
Really? Yeah. Really?
Are you throwing it out?
Really?
You give me the
WTIFAS. Yeah. Yeah, well, so here's the thing. Yes, I will throw it out. Okay. So let's just throw it out. Yeah, so just drop it like it's hot. But I understand. I think I have a pretty good understanding of why you would choose
that. I figured you would.
I would love your explanation.
Well, it's just that it's, again, I mean, you think Static's an outlier. Tropicália is really an outlier. And not to say, I like the song. I mean, I don't have anything against the song. It's not like I'll ever skip it when I'm listening to the album. But stylistically, not that it doesn't change styles, but it's over here. You know, it's like way over here.
Yeah.
And the rest of it is somewhere in this other scatter plot. And then there was that one. It would have been great as like a B-side to what's the one from the movie I just referenced earlier?
Deadweight.
Yeah. But again, and that's my only reasoning why. But I do like the song.
Now, let me ask you this. Now, do you think what if they would have put Deadweight on this album? Because one, those songs are, I think, like we said, I find these songs to be very similar.
Yeah,
are they too similar? Are they too similar to put on this album? But if they did, would that help balance it out in your opinion?
Yeah, if you did one per side, how long is the album? Could you have done that?
Well, it's hard to say because there's
49:17 though. 49:17.
Oh, plenty of time on a CD.
Well, no, I'm talking about the vinyl, but that's 49:17, assuming Static is 11 minutes and 20 seconds with Diamond Bullocks on it. Now, they didn't do that when they cut the record, so like, I don't know if you would. I think it would. If you would have put Deadweight on one side and Tropicália on the other, somehow it would have balanced it out. I don't know how, but I that's a interesting thought.
Yeah.
And once we start cutting our own vinyl, maybe we can do a test pressing of that.
We'll make our own version. Yeah. That's cool. So, wow, we didn't go into overtime.
No. I thought so, too.
Yeah. Really? Huh? You thought I was going to choose Tropicália for that reason?
Many reasons.
Okay. For many reasons.
Basically because your hatred of Brazilian music and cult. No, I'm just kidding.
Hey, I've been to Brazil. I love Brazil. I know. Lots to offer. So that's a lot of fun.
That's what I hear.
Yeah. Well, I think that about wraps it up, Renton Grimm,
It wraps it up just like back right here, wrapped up with all that plastic. And thank God for that.
Good old cellophane. Well, all right, everyone. We really appreciate you watching. Give us a like, subscribe, and comment below. Let us know what songs you guys would scratch and what songs are your guys' favorites. And if you have any more information on this album, you know, we would love your input because that's what we're here for. That's why we like talking about
this
stuff.
Subscribe, and comment below.
Tune out.
Yeah,
exactly.
All right, so, time to go.
On that note, time to go. The dude.
Scratch a Track is produced by the Dude and Grimm. Additional music provided by Moore and the Timms. Copyright 2023. The Dude and Grimm Show.